I'd like to ask a question. How many of you has ever cheated or was tempted to cheat on a test? Got two honest people. Well, on that, I think you said three. Four, five, six. Okay, all of us have. She pointed at you.
No, I'm probably often. So I guess that's cheating.
I think it's on the 13th when you're going to have the discussion on Satan. Every one of you should have plenty to say. Because, and I don't know if this is by design or coincidence, but my sermon today is on Satan the devil. So if you listen, all these questions are going to be answered, plus a lot more. So hang in there and watch, and if nobody don't answer, Mr. Eric's going to call me. No, I don't know if he's going to do that or not. I've mentioned Satan a few times in speaking. Usually he pops his ugly head up a little bit in every sermon and sermon that I give. But today I want to talk about Satan. There's some questions, and we'll answer them. Is Satan real? What is his purpose? Why was he created? Is he an enemy to us? If so, why? Is he evil? Was he created evil? If not, how did he become evil? Does he influence humans? Does he influence God's people? Why is there so much trouble in the world? Why does it seem to be, excuse me, why does it seem to be getting worse? Why is there very little peace in the world? Nations are at war, families are at war. We have broken homes, child neglect, child abuse, and on and on and on. Why? Well, we will answer these questions in this sermon. And I think that we can answer most of the questions by going to Ezekiel 28, starting in verse 12. Ezekiel 28, verse 12, God says, Son of man, take up a lamentation against the king of Tyre, and say to him, Thus says the Lord. Now listen to this description of Satan. He was a beautiful being at one time. You were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect beauty. That's something I don't think any of us had ever seen, even though we've seen some mighty beautiful people. Verse 18, you were in the Garden of Eden. You were in Eden, the Garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering. The sardis, topaz. Now, I may not pronounce a couple of these just right, but diamond, beryl, onyx, jasper, sapphire, turquoise, and emerald with gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes were prepared for you on the day you were created. The old King James says were prepared in you. So if it was that way, then he actually had musical instruments created in him. He must have played some beautiful music at one time. So Satan was created. That answers one of the questions. He wasn't born like we are. Verse 14, You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you, and you were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the fiery stones. 15, you were perfect in all your ways. From the day you were created till iniquity was found in you. 16, by the abundance of your trading you became filled with violence within and you sinned. Therefore I cast you out as a profane thing out of the mountain of God. And I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the fiery stones. Verse 17, your heart was filled up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom because of your splendor. You ever wonder why God hates pride and arrogance and puffed up? Satan corrupted his wisdom. He was probably one of the three most intelligent beings besides God the Father and Jesus Christ. He sinned and corrupted his wisdom, and I cast you to the ground, and I laid you before kings, that they may gaze at you. You defiled your sanctuary by the multitude of your iniquities. Do you know that God's church, that we can be puffed up with pride and arrogance if we ain't right careful and try to determine where some of these thoughts we get comes from? Satan was created perfect, but he was also given free moral agency. God wants children to love him freely. He could have pre-programmed us to be good, but we'd be robots. We wouldn't be capable of love. It would be just like setting the washing machine on a certain setting. That wouldn't be love. He wanted us to love him because we want to. I'll give you a quick demonstration of that. I went to South Carolina. I was about 4 weeks down there remodeling my grandson's trailer. While I was down there, my two great-granddaughters, one of them she never meets a stranger. She just is good with everybody. But the youngest of them was 4 years old at the time. And I wanted her to come to me. I didn't want to push myself on her. So I would speak to her and smile at her, and she kept getting closer and closer. And one day I was out sawhorse working, and she came up to me and said, "You want to see my acorns?" And her pockets were just bulging. She had two handfuls and I think a container full of acorns. And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Them are nice acorns, ain't they?" And I said, "What are you going to do with them?" She said, "I'm going to build a fence." So I went down there and I saw her down there below the trailer working at it. And a little bit she came up and said, "Want to see my fence?" So I said, "Yeah, I'd love to see your fence." So I walked down with her, and she had laid out these acorns all around like pasture fields and put the fences around them. And she said, "You like it?" And I said, "That," and to me it was, I said, "That is the most beautiful fence I've ever seen in my life." So a day or two later, my grandson and his wife was going shopping and asked me if it's okay if the kids stayed with me, which tickled me. And I said, "Sure." So the oldest one, she got my camera and wanted to take a picture of him. So just as she was about getting ready to take a picture, Mackenzie come running up and jumped on my lap, and I said, she said, take a picture of both of us. And we were fine after that. But that's the reason I'm telling them, that's the way God wants his children. He wants us, he probably smiles down on us and encourages us in different ways. But he wants children that will run and jump on his lap and do it voluntarily because we love him. That wouldn't be love. He wanted us to love him because we want to. So God created Satan also so he can choose right from wrong. We don't know how long it took, but he chose to oppose God, and he became violent and destructive. And now turn to Isaiah 14, verse 12 through 14. Isaiah 14, verse 12. How you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who wicked the nations. Verse 13. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farther side of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Here Satan starts out by exalting himself above the stars or angels of God. Then he further exalts himself to be like the Most High. I mean, he's really getting puffed up now. He thinks he's all of it. So, verse 15, you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit. Verse 16, those who see you will gaze at you and consider your sin. Is this the man who made the earth tremble? Who shook kingdoms? Who made the world as a wilderness and destroyed cities? Who did not open his house to his prisoners? So the questions I asked at the beginning, most of them are answered in just them two scriptures. Is Satan real? If so, what is his purpose? Why was he created? As we have seen from this scripture, Satan is real. He was created to be a covering cherub. He sinned, so he has a new purpose now. He's been very busy trying to destroy man, or make man destroy themselves. So his purpose now is to destroy God's church and to destroy the family. And he's doing a good job of that. And destroy as many humans as he can. He has caused a lot of destruction on earth, but we know that as time goes on, it will get worse. We know that Satan exerts a powerful influence on the world. We have seen Satan's influence on God's people, and many have left the church or started their own group. The title of this sermon is Satan's Influence on God's People. Why and how does Satan do this? He has had a lot of success in destroying the family. If you look at the world today, I and some of you came from a time and a place where the family was different. The mother stayed home and took care of the children and husband and her home. And children were taught by the parents right principles. Then in the 60s, things started getting out of hand. Dr. Spock, or whatever his name was, started saying you'd damage a child's personality or something. I don't remember exactly how that was, but people lit up. They quit training their kids and building right character in them. And Satan has hammered at the church for 2,000 years, and of course the apostles and prophets and Israel and all the world before that. God is building a family, and Satan hates that. He can't be in that family. God is using the human family to be a model to go by, although mostly the family in general is not a very good model right now, but it will be later. Let's go back to in history again, to the time when Satan rebelled. We don't know how long that's been, I think. But it was before time. Some of the scientists estimate that the Earth, I think, is about 16 billion years old. And it was before that. And in Job, it says, all the angels shouted for joy when the Earth was made. And that included Satan. So it's been a long time. He's been a long time doing his thing. After Satan rebelled, he started working on the angels, possibly one or two, or maybe a few at a time. We don't know for sure, but I studied a little bit about salesmanship, including multi-level marketing. And they start out with one or two people, and these, they get so many people, and the ones that they recruit get so many, and on. And it's supposed to build up a large sales force. It don't work, but some people make some money off of it. I think this is a lot how Satan worked. It could possibly be one of his plans. But somehow he caused one-third of the angels to follow him. They rebelled against God, and a lot of destruction was done. The earth was made without form and void. I mean, it wasn't made that way. He made it that way. Then God rebuilt the earth and put man on it. And let's look at Genesis 3, 1 through 7. Now the serpent was more cunning. Than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said to you, you shall not eat of every tree in the garden? Verse 2, and the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God says you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Verse 4, then the serpent said to the woman, you shall not surely die, for God knows that in the day you eat it, your eyes will be opened, and you'll be like God, knowing good from evil. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of the fruit and ate and gave to her husband, and he ate. Then the eyes of both were opened, and they saw that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves clothing, coverings. It takes less than 3 minutes to read straight through these seven verses. Did Satan in two or three minutes convince Eve to disobey God? It's hard for me to think so. There's another sales technique that I've heard of, and it says, when the prospect says no, the sale is just starting. What I don't understand is, what part of no don't they understand? It really annoys me when I say no to a salesman and he just keeps on trying to push something on me. But I'm pretty sure this is one of Satan's sales techniques also. Another sales pitch from a man who goes around lecturing a salesman. He's called Zig Ziglar, and he's got two sayings that I remember. He says, don't sell the steak, sell the sizzle. And he also says, don't make them drink, make them thirsty. In other words, create lust, desire, coveting. And I think that this is Satan's sales pitch also. He probably just offhanded said, see that tree over yonder in the middle of the garden? That's one beautiful tree. Maybe it happened in a day, maybe it took several days. But remember, the serpent was very cunning. Next time he works on her a little more. Maybe he marks about the tree's aroma. He carefully creates desire and lust. Next time he mentions a fruit. Next time he may offhand wonder what it would taste like. He works to really get her curiosity up, to really get her to thinking about that tree. But each time he focused her attention on something supposedly good, just like he works on people today. So over a period of time, maybe it's not a long time, maybe it was, you know, we don't know. But I think he took some time to do that. She may have refused at first, but when she said no, Satan really started working on her then. So instead of calling for God and Adam's help, she gives in. Notice verse 6 again. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes, all of the selling points that Satan uses today, and the tree was desirable to make one wise, lusting for wisdom without working for it, or digging in and studying for it, she took the fruit and she ate and gave to her husband and he ate. Notice verse 7 again. Then their eyes were opened, and they knew they were naked. They started immediately feeling guilty. And we don't know what he had to say about that. He might have pointed at them and said, what are y'all doing running around here like that? Don't you know you're nasty like that? You know, and it's not wrong for a husband or wife to see each other without clothes on. God intended it that way. But he made them feel shame and disgust at yourself. And they started having a guilty conscience. This is something they've never experienced before. Have you ever noticed when we give in to something wrong that our first reaction is guilt? It should be, because we're all guilty. Some may determine never to do it again, but others may say something like, oh, well, I can't resist, so I may as well enjoy. Or some should sing like that. I went through this section so that we'll know our enemy. One of the big generals, I think it was George Patton, said that to defeat your enemy, you need to know your enemy. And I think he had a lot of spies out trying to find out all that they were doing and all they were up to. So how does Satan influence God's people? Or any people for that matter? And we can see a pattern. There are many ways he uses pride, greed, lust, bitterness, slander, gossip, accuser, unconverted people, the opposite sex, revenge, being unforgiven, impulse, growing up too soon, love at first sight, and on and on and on. I was thinking about these things as I was preparing this in my mind, and I got to thinking, I mean, the list just goes on and on. I got to listen, thinking maybe it'd be easier just to tell the things that you don't use. I don't think you'd hardly think of one thing that he doesn't use, because he can use anything. He's been around for billions of years, and he's got it on us big time. He's certainly watching us. He knows all our weaknesses, he knows all our habits, and he's constantly poised to strike when we get off guard a little bit. But overall, it's through Satan's lying, deceptive influence is how he influences mankind. Turn to John 8, verse 44. John 8, verse 44, Christ said to the Pharisees, You are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and does not stand in the truth, because the truth is not in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. He spoke the first lie to Eve when he was tempting her. He said, you won't surely die. Satan is a master of deception. He can make his offer look very good. And tempting Eve to eat the fruit or choose for herself what's right and wrong is basically what it was. Satan, in a sense, murdered every person that would ever live, because God had to pronounce that 6,000-year time period for man to find out what happened when he chooses Satan's way instead of God's way. He has an agenda. He started with Eve. He convinced her to choose for herself what is right and wrong. And then the pattern continues. Cain and Abel brought an offering to God. God didn't accept Cain's offering. Cain was very angry. God told him, said, If you do well, you'll be accepted. If not, sin lies at your door. Cain talked with Abel. Maybe he said something like, you sure made me look bad in front of God. You could have brought that old runt lamb, give it to him, used it for sacrifice, and Abel might have said something like, I had to give God the best no matter what, and no matter what you did. So Cain, in his anger, under Satan's influence, killed Abel. How long did Satan work on Cain's mind, turning him to jealousy, bitterness, and anger against his younger brother? Under Satan's influence, man became more evil. Until the Noah's time, they became so evil that God decided to destroy them. If you turn to Genesis 6, verse 5, Genesis 6, verse 5, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the heart, intent of the thoughts of the heart, was only evil continually. Verse 6, and the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So, of course, he worked with Noah and had him to build the ark, and he sent the flood waters, and all of mankind was destroyed except Noah and his family. When God called Saul and made him king of Israel, Saul was humble and obeyed God. But he became proud, puffed up, and he disobeyed God. He thought that he could do it better than God. This is in 1 Samuel 15, 17 through 20. And I'll just paraphrase it. You can copy that down and go through the whole thing. But when he was little in his own eyes, God could use him. Again, using pride, vanity, and deceit, Satan influenced Saul to take the matters into his own hands. So God rejected him. God can only use those who are little in their own eyes. When we're given authority and we let it go to our heads, then we become bitter, proud, puffed up, and think that we can do it better than God, then God can't use us unless we repent. No human being without God's help is immune to Satan's influence. If we start listening to men and not God, and through His Word, the Bible, or the leadership of the church, we're heading for a fall. If we listen to a minister even who talks against the church, we're heading for a fall. Friends and relatives can sometimes be our worst enemies that are not in the church. You're not converted. I love everyone, but if someone comes to me with something that didn't come from the Bible or the leadership of the church, I simply don't want to hear it. I'm not going to stand and listen to it. Satan works through family, friends, and anyone that can influence, that he can influence. Even ministers trying to gain a following for themselves. God's true ministers have more of God's Spirit than the average member, but sometimes I think that they have a bigger battle with Satan. If Satan influences me or one of you to sin or leave the church, he has gained one person. But if he can get to a minister, he can usually deceive or take away several people. We need to keep this in mind and pray for God's men, true ministers. We need to pray for their protection from Satan's lying influence. We need to got my tongue pushed down my eye too, and couldn't see what I see. We need not judge the ones that have left, but pray for them that God will open their eyes. We need to be humble, caring, loving, and try to be someone that God can use. Just for the record, a lot of this information was put together right after the church split, and I'm using it in this now. But something we need to think about: an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. If we think about these things, maybe we will be ready if it ever happens again. We need to get our heart into the Word. That is our whole reason for living. And what a great purpose for living. If we have a question, we need to ask a faithful minister or contact headquarters and not listen to a bunch of junk on the computer. Satan also influences us through our weaknesses, and he knows them all. I stated that a little bit ago. He's constantly watching to make us stumble. Satan wants to destroy God's church. And he's not going to give up. He'll take one of us, 100, 1,000, whatever he can get turned away. We've seen a pattern and a personality. He's a destroyer, an adversary, and an opponent. He hates God's people and deceives us by his lying, excuse me, his lying, deceiving personality. He can make it look very good. He focuses on self and tries to influence us to focus on ourselves. He can make things look good and desirable and delicious. He focuses on get and not give. If we get in a questionable situation, we need to ask ourselves, is this selfish? It's not wrong to get things, but not selfishly. And this covers a lot of situations. We need to pray for the leadership of the church. That's what we just fasted about last week. That God will guide them to do his will. You know, all of us too, for that matter. And remember, this is the only work in existence that will last throughout eternity. We have so much to look forward to. We need to get the job done so Jesus Christ can come back, set up God's kingdom on earth, and straighten out this crooked, sin-filled world. Some of the things I've been hearing on the news, I listen a lot to a talk radio station, and one man, I can't think of his name, he has a 2-hour every morning. And he's told some stories that has actually brought tears to my eyes of what is happening in some of these countries. And the only thing that's going to really stop it is Christ coming back. And we need to be praying for that with all of our heart. And I've talked about the world, how the world is going bad, and from bad to worse. And there is little peace on earth. But I'm mostly talking about Satan's influence on God's people. We've seen some of the influence on God's people, and many have left the church, and I've talked about some of the ways that he does that. But I'm going to go over this list again. He has a pattern and a personality. We can see and recognize and avoid or resist. He uses pride. When a person is puffed up, thinks he is above others, he is a hard person to deal with. Greed. Greed is one of the most destructive emotions in existence. Whole nations have been wiped out because of greed, because someone wanted what their neighbors had. Lust, or coveting. Coveting is actually the first cousin to lust. The first cousin to greed. Greed and lust go hand in hand. We can't know all the destruction, murder, torture that has been caused by these two. Slander. Many a person has been basically destroyed, at least emotionally, by slander. Slander and gossip are not the same, really. Slander, according to the dictionary, is false or damaging utterance about a person. And I'm of the mind that a lot of it is done deliberately to destroy somebody. Gossip is still bad. Unconstrained talk, rumor, idle talk. Unconverted people. These are people we deal with, everybody around with, their close friend or other. They can turn us away from the church if we're not careful. The opposite sex. This is one of Satan that Satan loves. If he can get one of God's people interested in someone outside the church, he can do a lot of damage. Revenge or not forgiven. This is another one of his figure-out tools. And this is one that we need to be very careful about. We need to remember how much we need God's forgiveness and the forgiveness of each other. Impulse. You think you can use that one? How many times have we done something on impulse and later realize that we were wrong, and sometimes terribly wrong? It's a good practice to make a practice of taking a few minutes and consider the pros and cons before we act on impulse. Growing up too soon. Most kids want to hurry up and grow up. They want to be big like mommy and daddy, or like other grown-ups. But I would advise the children that you enjoy each period of your life. All of these things you want to do happen. Driving a car, getting married, and all the other things in the future is for you that you want to do. Will happen. Have fun. Enjoy whatever period of life that you're in. Just remember, you'll have to answer to God. I've been a grown-up since I was 55 years old. since I've been about that many years. And there have been many times when I look back to the wonderful life that I had when I was growing up. And would like to go back there. I know I can't, the world totally different, but I was really blessed. But you enjoy youth. Old age will come all too soon. And Satan can use this desire in many ways. And this next one is very bad and one of Satan's biggest lies and very destructive. Thousands of people have been hurt badly by this lie, and that is love at first sight. Romantic love don't just happen. True love takes time. You meet someone that you're interested in, and things could possibly develop. If you're thinking of spending the rest of your life with a person, you better take time to get to know them. I've seen in my lifetime many cases of love at first sight, and they last 6 months to a year, and they can't stand the sight of each other. There's one person told me, said when people get married, they change. No, they don't change. That's the way they always were. You're just looking through rose-colored glasses. You need to take them glasses off, of course. No young single people in here now except Allison, but you can tell your children this when you see them. A lot of times in a relationship like this, a child is born. So the child suffers, the couple suffers, everyone is hurt. And Satan jumps up and down with glee. Satan is the instigator of this. It just doesn't happen. If I was young and planning to get married, there's two questions I would ask. Is what kind of mother will this person be? Or in a girl's case, what kind of father is he going to be to my children? Number two, and I can't stress the importance of this enough, and I'm speaking from experience here. What kind of in-laws will they be? That is very, very important. When you go to dealing with someone that's totally different your beliefs and can actually get vicious about it, you're not going to be able to raise your children like you want to. Because grandma especially is going to be constantly in there telling them something different. And both of these will greatly affect your children. And this is only some of the ways that Satan influences God's people. Remember, if it's clean, unselfish, and makes others happy and feel good, there is a chance that it is good. Of course, there are things that Satan tries to make you think is good, and it's not, like drugs, sex outside of marriage, and other things. He can make them look really good. Don't listen to the sizzle. Don't let it make you thirsty. Remember, Eve, Satan got her alone. You got her to focus on supposedly good things. Don't let him get you alone. If you're being tempted, talk to someone. Your parents, a close friend that thinks like you do, a minister, or someone that can really help you, especially God. Remember, Satan, through self-deception, exalted himself above the stars or angels of heaven. And finally, into believing that he could be above the throne of God. Then he deceived a third of the angels. Later he deceives Eve, influences Cain to kill his brother. In Deuteronomy 8, 9 through 20, you can look that up later, God tells Israel all that he's going to give them. Then in the end, he gives them a warning. Beware that you don't forget your God and keep his commandments. Then he names what he's going to give them. Then in verse 17, and you say in your heart, my power and my might and my hand has gotten me all this wealth. And that's what people in America have forgotten today. They think they can go out and do their own thing, and they're doing it. But it's going to be a day of reckoning. Then he warns them not to forget that they will perish. But as we know, they did forget and decided to do what was right in their own eyes. Who does this remind you of? Remember Ezekiel 28:12-18? Satan chose pride, vanity, and deception, and lies instead of obeying God. God knew that Israel would be influenced by Satan. He warned them not to become puffed up and forget where their blessings came from, like Satan, and to think that they had gained this by their own hand. We know that they followed Satan's lead. And as we look back in history, we see the prophets warning them not to take up Satan's nature. Everything negative in our lives should make us look for signs of Satan's lying, deceptive nature. Can God's elect be deceived? Christ said no one could pluck us out of his hand, and they can't. But if we listen to lying, slander, gossip, and so forth, we can allow ourselves to be deceived. One of Satan's favorite ways to try to destroy God's church is to divide and conquer. He has done this throughout history. The church has risen to tens of thousands and then dropped down to a few. I think Peter Waldo was one that he actually got rid of his wealth, but he's kept enough of it. I think it was somewhere around the 1100s, 1500s, or something like that. But he raised up a university to train ministers. And I'm not going to try to cite the number that he had, but it was in the thousands and thousands. But then when Mr. Armstrong was called by God, he went into the Sardis church, and they were down just barely existing. And then he started up Radio Church of God. But Satan brings them down. Usually, I think if I remember right, this booklet was by Herman Hay, The True History of the True Church. But, of course, Mr. Armstrong built it back up. And since he died, a lot of problems. I think there's over 400 different groups come out of Worldwide Church of God. Someone said that United was on its way out. I know who that was, but I'm not going to name her. because some of you in here knows it. Satan would like for us to believe that and just throw up our hands and give up. Well, we're not, and God will bring us through. Another of Satan's traits that he doesn't like to be under authority, and most people don't. I think this is something that most of us have to deal with. I know I've had my problem with it. When someone has a certain amount of authority and becomes puffed up and wants more authority that God didn't give him, he's in trouble. He throws up his hands and he stomps his feet, mentally at least, and he wants to be the big boss. We're all under authority, except the Father. He's the big boss. Then Christ, then top church leaders, down through the ministers, deacons, elders and deacons, and so on. God chose all people for whatever job and promotes them. Anything else, and we're following Satan's influence. Turn to 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3. Second Corinthians 11, verse 3 says, "For I fear lest somehow as a serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted from the simplicity in Christ." The solutions to any problem in a church or personal problems is to simply pray to God and ask Him to straight work it out and trust Him to work it out. Any problem that we have, otherwise Satan will have all of us confused. Some have allowed their minds to become confused and from this simplicity and allowed Satan to influence them. Go to verse 15, 13 through 15. Verse 13 says, "For such are deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ." And 14, "And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light." Verse 15, "Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers transform themselves into the ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to the works." God is a God of order. Satan is a master of confusion. We can allow ourselves to be deceived. We need to keep it simple. Do you keep all slander, lying, and so forth out of our minds? Another thing that Satan uses is, and we need to watch for, is Satan is the accuser of the brethren. He's accuser of everybody, really. Because one, he accuses us to God. He might say something like, "Did you see what Herman did? And you call him a Christian?" Or something like that. Two, he is accuser of God to the brethren and others. Like he did Eve. He accused God of deceiving Eve, saying, "You won't surely die." Oh, God is not fair, or any number of things that he could think of. Three, he is an accuser of the church and its leadership to the brethren, to try to cause conflict and division in the church. Remember, one of Satan's principles is divide and conquer. He also accuses the leadership of not being fair. This all comes from Satan. 4, he accuses the husband to the wife, the wife to the husband, parents to children, children to parents, and on and on. I've known husbands or wives to bring up things that happened a long time ago, or parents that browbeat their children about something, a mistake that they had made. This is so sad and so destructive to the child, whoever is involved. We need to forgive and put it behind us. This is all part of Satan's destructive nature. We can't change the past, but with God's help, we can change ourselves. So these things are all Satan's nature and personality. We can see a pattern in his lying nature in everything in our lives, especially when someone is trying to talk against the church. We need to look for these signs. We need to study and see how Satan had deceived everyone throughout history. So we need to hang in there. And if anyone does get tripped up and fall, they need to pray for help, get up, be stronger and wiser, and go again. So I would like to sum up everything on a very encouraging note that makes everything make more sense. Satan knows our purpose. We were born to be in God's family, the very sons and daughters of God. We will replace Satan. Our future is so glorious, we can't really imagine. Satan hates us and would destroy every one of us if he could. We need to look for these signs and resist him and not be deceived. Turn to Revelation 20, verse 1. And this is something we all should look out for and pray for. Revelation 20, verse 1, then I saw an angel coming out of heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit, and a great chain in his hand. He laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years, and cast him into the bottomless pit, and shut him up, and set a seal on him that he should deceive the nations no more. Till 1,000 years are finished. You know, I think a lot when you're alone, you got a lot of time to meditate. I think a lot about Satan and the demons are constantly broadcasting. And I wonder, when that lock clicks, his influence is going to be cut off, just like turning the radio off. And I wonder if there are not many, many people that are just going to look around like they just woke up from a bad dream and say, what happened? What have I been doing? And that's going to make them a lot easier to work with. They're going to be puzzled and concerned because their mind has been on Satan's ways for so long, and all of a sudden they're free of that. And I think it's also going to be like lifting a weight off of these people's minds. But we'll see. As I just read, Satan will be bound for 1,000 years, so people will be free from his influence, and we can help Christ to clean up this mess. and teach people God's way is the only way to true peace and happiness. Turn to Romans 8, verse 14 through 18. Romans 8, I got 14, Romans 8, verse 14. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, hopefully that's us, these are the sons of God. For you did not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you received the spirit of adoption, by whom we cry out, Abba, Father. Verse 16, and the Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. Verse 17, and if children, then heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. If indeed we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together. For I consider that the sufferings of this recent time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed to us. Satan hates his promise. He does not want us to attain it. But if we watch, stay close to God, pray, and grow, and not allow ourselves to be deceived by Satan or anyone, none can pluck us out of his hand. So we need to get our hearts into the work, pray for the work, pray for the leaders, the ministers, so that we can get the work done and so Jesus Christ can come back and put Satan away and straighten out this crooked, sin-filled world.